Sendung Wellenlänge. Vous écoutez la transmission Longueur d'onde. Udite la trasmissione Lunghezza d'onde. You are hearing the transmission called Wavelength.
Good afternoon. It is 50 years since the 1958 Brussels World Fair. And Wavelength this weekend is ostensibly about Belgium, prompted to some extent by the forthcoming publication Belgium and the Belgians by Professor Oscar Hardmuth, otherwise known as Richard Thomas, whose father played football for Ghent. We are also joined by artist Jerry Smith, who established an annex of the Belgian embassy in Stoke Newington in, when was that, Jerry?
I suppose about 1990, really.
Yeah. And does your house have a Belgian flag outside it? Or?
Well, I keep taking it down. But no, it's once you get inside, though, it's there's a lot of odds and ends.
Yeah. And Richard, perhaps you could tell us your connection with Belgium. What was this about your father playing football for Ghent?
Well, yeah, it's a mysterious period, largely before I was born. But he was playing football in South Wales, mainly, on a semi-sort of professional level. And he must have had some sort of transfer around about 1970, 71, or an opportunity at least to go to Belgium. And he ended up playing for Ghent, not for long, possibly a season. Mm-hmm. And his career didn't flourish into that of a professional football player, which would have been nice, I suppose, in terms of cash.
Yes.
But no, he became a builder's merchant, believe it or not. But but we used to go there quite a lot as well, you know, to Belgium, go to Brussels and Ostende and so on. And I've never known why it was so fascinating for my dad, why we went there and not, you know, Magaluf or...
Yes.
You know, and...
You were saying earlier there's some there is some sort of connection between the word Wales and Wallonia.
Yeah, I think it has the same sort of etymology, which is Wales essentially is a Roman term for foreigner, which is a bit of a cheek from an imperial army, really, to declare probably the closest you get to a native inhabitant of the British Isles as being foreign. But there you are. And I think the same goes for the Walloons. I think the word has the same etymology, yeah.
Belgium being a division between Wallonia and Flanders.
Come on.
Is this...
There's a small section of Germans as well on the other side.
They're they're in Wallonia as well, though, aren't they?
Yeah, three official languages. Yeah. Yeah.
And you were saying about Brussels, about how people cross each other's signs out and so on, was it?
Yeah, especially once you go on the outside of Brussels. Because, I mean, it's in Brussels itself, you know, everything's written in two languages. Yeah. I remember my first time, you know, I went there to as a sort of artiste, you know. I thought, well, I've got no money on that. I'll make sandwiches, sort of go at lunchtime, you know, sit in the park, you know. Well, I went up there and there's a sign next to it. It said park in Flemish and park in French, you see, you know. But it says park, you see, differently. So when I got back, they said to me, oh, where you been? I said, I went to park, you see. But I wasn't, I mean, who's used to this thing being written twice everywhere?
Well, you kind of get that in Wales also because of the English speakers. It's a slightly different thing. You've got Dutch and Flemish speakers in Belgium, of course, but... I mean, you know, you have telephone and telephone and bank and bank. Bank is spelt B-A-N-C in Welsh and B-A-N-K in English.
And what's the word for public toilet in Wales?
Oh, God knows. I don't know.
You see that everywhere as well on the outside of you. See these sort of, I can't remember what it is now, but there's a word sort of, I can't remember.
Well, this is the other thing why I suppose I identified with the Walloons to a certain extent, because they seem to be quite a maligned sort of species within Belgium. And it's the same, I think, if you're from South Wales. You're neither kind of English enough for the English or Welsh enough for the Welsh. Yes. See, my father's first language was Welsh, but I never learned it.
Right.
I mean, apart from what you pick up from, you know, being immersed in that culture. But
so a couple of weeks ago, Richard, you suggested that you might be doing a sort of project to do with Belgian surrealism.
Well, and beyond, you know, beyond that, or maybe the way that extends into just everyday life, not just art, you know.
Why Belgian surrealism and not French surrealism?
Well, it's probably been... I don't know what this project will be either. I just started researching it and becoming interested in it. And I thought Marcel Brutus was you know, quite an extraordinary person. Again, the when you look, just if you're lazy and just look online, there isn't an awful lot of text or printed matter available about the artist.
Mm.
Frequent references to the Belgian surrealist movement and so on, but I don't really know who they are. I mean, everybody knows Magritte, I suppose. You could factor in there, but yeah. I mean, I was just interested in it on as broad a possible level, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
And
well, Jerry, you've had a lot of experience of Broters, haven't you? You actually own a Broters yourself.
I was lucky enough to buy one.
What's the piece you've got?
It's a little cannon that he made as a present for Roland Penrose at the end of the exhibition at the ICA in 75 called Decor. And it's just a very model cannon from back to Waterloo. And in the barrel is a little note, which is a little note to Roland Penrose, which is lovely.
But you've almost sort of got could I call it an obsession with Belgium? You're a frequent visitor. I mean, you were in Ostend
recently,
just last week almost. You seem to go backwards and forwards, and I've noticed in the past, every conversation I've ever had with you, within two sentences, it gets back to Belgium.
I think I remember the first time I went there, I went to Paris when I was like really young, and I was so disappointed. You know, I ended up, on the left bank and everything, and the Sorbonne, and I ended up getting a cup of tea at one of those funny machines, and I thought, is this it? You know, it just didn't feel what I'd imagined. But when I got to Brussels in 1990, it was exactly like artists living in the middle of the city, things being cheap, things being very amicable, people introducing you to people. You know, but it may be just because of the experience. But Brussels itself just knocked me out it looked like post-war. You know, like there's it wasn't like the advertising you get here, or rundown buildings in the centre, loads of different communities right near the centre.
Yeah.
You know, where the Bourse is, just down the road. You know, it's just...
So was that your first... 1990, was that when you first actually went there?
I've been there before, but just like anyone else, stop off on the way back from Germany or something, you know, just for 5 minutes sort of thing. But because I had a friend, you know, there I stayed, you know. And once you meet people, then you're off, aren't you?
Yeah.
You know, like, and I met some artists through people, and you hear about all the... And it's all... It's a basically you find a place through word of mouth, in a sense, like people introducing you, which is fantastic, you know.
Yeah.
But Belgium is just, like you were saying about the surrealists, there was twins called the Piqueray twins, and they were sort of friendly with, and well, I managed to meet one of them before he died, you know, and then in the museum in Brussels, there's a lovely work of Paul Collinet, who's another surrealist, and Marcel Piqueray. And I tried to find this. They had the original plates for the book, but I tried to find it, but I couldn't get it. And then managed to get hold of Marcel Piqueray through somebody else. And then he photocopied all the originals for me and gave it to him. And he wrote on it, you know, if you don't understand this, don't go to the eye doctor, you know, which is really lovely, you know. Like, and I like the wickedness of human. Yeah.
Paul Delvaux, he's another one, isn't he? Wasn't he sort of...
Yeah, there's a huge mural of his. I mean, that, you know, that's, you go down the underground stations there, you know, and there's a huge mural of Paul Delvaux, you know. And so it's all everywhere.
I think I saw his first exhibition catalogue, and Delvaux, he looks incredibly bohemian, doesn't he? He was like really sort of far out with a kind of this huge studded leather belt, and he looks quite aggressive. I suppose that would have been about 1949 or something. He was quite relatively late, wasn't he?
I think so, yeah. And the melancholy of it all is so... You know, I don't know. Maybe it's the North Sea up there. And you know, there's an artist called Leon Spilliard, which over there, artists adore him, but he's very not known here, you know. And you go to Ostend, though, and you feel that melancholy.
Mm. Ostend translates as East End, doesn't
it? East End, yeah. I never knew that until recently.
But why is it? It's on the West Coast, why is it called...
I'm still waiting to find out, because I even say it to them. They say, oh, yeah, it's East End. But I say, well, why do they call it East End? And I've not got the answer yet.
Okay. And you were there kind of just recently, and apparently you bumped into Marvin Gaye's guitarist in a cafe.
Well, it was I was doing this little show, and round the corner I was having a beer, but the cafe was fantastic. You know, when you sit down, and you think, after a minute, you think, this music's brilliant, the atmosphere's brilliant, it's lovely, you know. And then I was out at the bar, and I'm a bit obsessed with sort of Marvin Gaye going to Ostend, you know, and Channel 4 made a great film about it. And I was saying about Marvin Ostend, and I made a sort of... And this guy behind the bar says, oh, I used to play guitar for him. It's called... I couldn't believe it, you know.
Yeah.
And the guy's called Danny, you know. And then, you know, sometimes you just think, oh, it's all that, you know, whether he's telling the truth or blah, blah. The next day, through our artist friend, there's a guy who was from Ostend, but he now lives in Bali, but he happened to be in Ostend because friends come to see the exhibition I'd done. And I said, I won't believe it. I met, he said, Danny, I went to school with him. Yeah, he's from Ostend. Yeah, he played with James Brown. He did 30 gigs in England with Marvin.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought, oh, that... And well, the bar wasn't even open. He's a late night guy, Danny. So, which is a bit unlucky.
Well, I picked up this... I got this CD from... it's a Sub Rosa CD called Music's In The Margin. And they're all sort of outsider artists. And a good 50% of them seem to be from Belgium. Interestingly enough. So I'll quickly play a couple of these tracks. So those were two tracks by Reinhilde Tastener. One was called Dikke Trom, and the other was called Dikke Manier. The first one means fat trom, and the second one means...
fat trom?
Yes, whatever that is.
And how's that spelled?
T-R-O-M.
It's not like traum, is it?
I don't know. Dream. But meneer just means fat man, really. Dikke Manier is fat man.
Okay.
So every track she makes just seems to be fat somebody or other.
Which I suppose, again, is a sort of... Jerry, I was going to ask you, I mean, do you think that there's a certain kind of... Anglophilia in Belgium? I seem to remember going there and being astounded in the, you know, the 1970s that you could see British television.
Oh, yeah.
I remember watching Fawlty Towers in a hotel in Ostender and so on. And
I think they're brought up on it, I think.
Beer and chips. I mean, actually, they put Britain to shame in terms of beer. What, is there something like 172 varieties of Belgian beer or something?
And I even discovered, it was all like the monks and all that, but the nuns made it as well.
Oh, really?
Know?
Right.
Yeah, there's a monk called Carmelite from around Antwerp.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's gorgeous, you know. But apparently, you know, the beers, they're very experimental. So when the First World War, because all the English people over there, they were really into trying new things out. So, I mean, they just keep it going. It's not something that's all set in its ways, you know, which is lovely, you know.
Yeah.
So it's, but there's a lovely bar in Brussels called the... Well, it's really funny because it's called the Greenwich, but they pronounce it, they say the Greenwich, you see. So it's kind of, I always find it funny. But there's a lovely... they've got a little back room where... They play chess there, but Magritte used to go there a lot, you know. But in the back room, they've given it over to sort of artists to use. And it's just like a gorgeous old yellow space. And loads of these bars, they look like they've never been painted. So they didn't get all that 60s, rip it all out and put what is in, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's, I don't know.
Is this where you met the Freemason guy?
Oh, that was on the Marche aux Puces. That was the flea market.
Oh.
We were just sitting outside. It's a lovely market there in Brussels. And... but this guy's arrived, you know, with this huge pendant round it. It looked like the mayor's pendant. So just his smile, and I just thought, oh, you're the mayor, you know.
Yeah.
He says, oh, no, he says, it's actually the Grand Mark. The symbol of Brussels is Saint-Michel, and it's in the Grand Place, and it's holding the sword up. And he says he's part of the guild that look after the sword. And I was chatting away, and he knew I really loved Brussels and Belgium and all that. And then at a certain moment, he says, look, he says, I'm going to give you one of our honours. So he pinned this little gold badge on me of the symbol of Brussels. And his name is Rennie van Rossum. And he was really lovely, you know. But it was just one of those, I don't know why it is. They love people coming. It's like a railway station for me, Belgium.
Yeah.
A bit. Everyone's sort of on their way through. It hasn't got this sort of like, everyone's passing through in a way.
Yeah,
you know what they are, but I don't know.
Yes, yeah. I think the only time I ever went, I was passing through on the way to Holland.
Right. Yeah.
Through Ostend on a train. But
there's a lovely book Penamarenko made. He's a really top Belgium artist who's into flying machines and everything. But they were talking about the border. On the front cover, John Thompson, who did the essay, he starts, he puts his essay on the front cover, and he talks about the border between Belgium and Holland. And he says it's a serious border because the Dutch see it as the start of state-sponsored fiscal irresponsibility. But the Belgians see the border as the sort of death of like the imagination and the end of poetry. So it's this real, and so a load of, I've got a good friend from Rotterdam, and he says when he was young, they always used to go to Antwerp for the weekend, just to sort of get that freedom, you know.
Yeah.
Jerry, I was going to ask you, actually, have you ever been to the Atomium?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, which is a fantastic piece of public art, I suppose you could call it, or architecture, which was built for the 1958 Expo, or the World Fair. I think, don't they have a Brutus, a small Brutus exhibition within it?
That's right, yeah, a little showcase, yeah. Oh. And it's like, but it feels, I've done it up recently, so I haven't been back, but it feels like a lot of tin foil inside. It's like Doctor Who in, you know, the feel of it, you know, is, and the tubes are like escalators, so you're going up and down, it's lovely.
It's an extraordinary thing, it's the kind of thing that would have been demolished, in, you know.
Mm. It was just built temporarily, wasn't it, for the World Fair in 58. Mm.
There's another good connection there as well, isn't there? Because it's where Verres, for the same fair, Verres and Le Corbusier collaborated, and Verres, of course, famously composed a poem Electronique, which was, you know, a fairly early piece of music concrète, I suppose. So we're in the same site.
Okay. Now, speaking of music concrète, you've brought... Jerry, you've brought a CD along.
Oh, yes.
What is this?
Well, it's like I've been introduced to this chap called Arno. And it's just because it seems to be everybody I've ever met there seems to be agree on that Arno is really, you know, top quality, you know.
Yeah.
And he sings a lot. He's from Ostend, but he sings in French and in English. This track is in English, and it's called Solo Gigolo.
All right. Is it? Track 15?
Track 15, yeah.
My head of all the things I said, like I said before, I'm just a lonely solo gigolo. At the bars nobody is missing, in my head the moon is smiling, I let it flow real slow, real slow. Are you with someone else, or just with yourself? Nothing has changed, but kids today. Don't you worry about me. There's a crack in everything. That's how the light, a new light, gets in. Thank you. don't need me anymore. It doesn't matter anymore. Like I said before, I'm just a lonely solo gigolo. In your head the moon is crying, in my heart the sun is shining. Like I said before, I'm just a lonely solo gigolo. Like I said before, I'm just a lonely solo gigolo.
Okay, thank you. That was somebody called Arno that you brought in, Jerry. Can you tell us anything about him? Sounds a bit Brell-like, slightly. The sort of
He's a bit of a rocker as well. I think I just put a track on there because I wanted to get across that sort of North Sea melancholy a bit.
But, so is he a big name only in Belgium, or is he sort of across the...
In France as well, uh-huh. And in Holland. I'm surprised... It's not sort of, it doesn't come across the water, which is when you go there, you know, all the artists I've ever met, you know, Arno, you know. That's the joy of travel, because that way, you know, these things open up to you. You know, like the artists as well, like you don't see over here.
Yeah, so Jerry, we briefly mentioned at the start of the show Marcel Brutus. So how do I pronounce it? I always pronounce it incorrectly.
I tried Brotas, but
Brotas,
I have seen people say Brutas, but when I first went there, I was going Brothiers, and I soon stopped saying it like that.
So. I mean, do you speak French?
Very badly,
right?
You know? But
right.
And also, it's like if you go to Belgium, if you try and speak French mistakenly to someone who's Flemish, they go berserk, because they're happy with English and
But whilst Arno was on, you were saying that Brotas has not, you know, maybe fared so well in galleries and so on because he's not such an easy person to define, because he's had such a sort of a varied kind of artistic output or varied life, you know. Because he famously turned to art to make some money at the age of 40.
Something insincere, he sort of said. You know, to be a success,
Didn't he start as a poet? He was originally a poet, wasn't he?
Yeah, that's right, And, I mean, it's a lovely sort of... He seems to sort of jump... He was sort of slightly involved with pop art and surrealism, and then conceptual art came along, and he was very much... But he always escaped it all in a way. But he did an exhibition sort of... I think that was quite late. I'm not sure when it was, but someone came up to him and said, "But Mr. Brotas, you know, this is just surrealism." And he said, "Shh, don't tell anybody." So he loved the whole thing of the market, and you know, the,
he made a lot of films as well, didn't he? Which don't get shown very often.
Any chance you get to see them is really worthwhile because they're. I mean, when he came to London, you know, he kind of made the Battle of Waterloo, which is superb. Also, the film about Jeremy Bentham. You know, there's the figure in London University. He was fascinated. He was fascinated with London, and because he wasn't well known here really, and he was shown at the Jack Wendler Gallery, and then came over to live. And that's luckily I got the chance to see two shows of his while he was alive, because there's something very special about the way he arranged things. Because, you know, what the work is very. It's hard to sort of, and maybe beautifully, you can't tie it down in a sense, you know.
No.
So the chance to see shows that he's installed, and people like Barry Barker who continue to promote him in England, which is great, really.
Have you seen any of his films, Richard?
I've seen bits and pieces. I've seen Battle of Waterloo, but I confess online, not projected on, 16mm or 35mm?
Yeah. He made films on 35mm as well, didn't he? Was it Monsieur Tet, which is one I've always wanted to see but missed?
Yeah, it was I went to sort of Brussels for a show, and then there was this show called Cinema in Düsseldorf, all about his films. And there's a nice catalogue to that as well, which is great. But I managed to went there from Brussels for the day, and I saw Monsieur Tet.
Oh, right.
And it was just a lovely, just a, one of those dummies where the head moves.
Uh-huh.
But there's a bit of the film whereby the actual camera follows the head, so the head is actually stationary in the whole background. And it is so simple.
Yeah,
yeah, it is. And he does this time and again. He did an introduction to Muybridge. It was little drawings of a horse, you know.
Mm.
And what he does is he shows this horse with the legs sticking out either end. Like the idea before Muybridge, we thought the way horse, we didn't understand the way horse moved its legs. But what Brotas does is he makes it into a frame, and then he has the rear end of the horse, two legs, coming out the left-hand side, and the front two come, sorry, the right-hand side, and the front two come out the left-hand side. Mm. So in a way, you've missed the horse altogether. You've got the frame, which has captured the front of the horse and the back of the horse, but not the middle. And it's a fantastic play on Muybridge, you know, movement. And
well, we're kind of moving towards 3:30. So thank you very much to Jerry Smith, Belgian ambassador for Stoke Newington, and Professor Oscar Hardmuth, and Richard Thomas, of course.
Thank you. Yes.
With your forthcoming project on Belgium.
Forthcoming, I think, it might be a long time in gestation.
Well, I thought we'd play out with a Marvin Gaye track.
Oh, fantastic.
Which isn't from his Belgian period, but there we are.
When exactly was his Ostend period?
It was when he made Sexual Healing. He recorded that in Laon near Brussels.
On the oceans and upon our seas, fish full of mercury. Oh, mercy, mercy me. Our things ain't what they used to be. Lost my radiation underground and in the sky. Animals and birds who live nearby are alive. Mercy, mercy me. All things and what they used to be. What about this overcrowded land? How much more we use from men? Can't you stand it?